I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
At least 86 seconds. Almost a minute and a half. That's how much time passed from the moment people shouted warnings about a man on a roof to when pops were heard. We now have a better sense of the timeline from Saturday's Trump rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. And a quick heads up that we'll be talking through and listening to some of the videos of how that evening unfolded.
If you want to really see something that's said, take a look at what happened. Oh.
The videos raise a lot of questions for the Secret Service. Like, what happened that allowed a 20-year-old to climb a roof and attempt to assassinate former President Donald Trump? And why couldn't anyone stop him? After Trump ducked down onto the stage, Secret Service agents could be heard asking the question that a lot of people had in the aftermath. What are we doing? What was the Secret Service doing?
You know, when I first heard this news, it was from my editor calling me to tell me that he needed my help. As soon as he told me, I went to the videos, I went to all of the material I could scour, and what I was stunned by was that it appeared to be an open line of sight between where the shooter was on a roof directly to the stage where Donald Trump was standing. This issue of line of sight is something that Secret Service agents have been sleepless about since 1963.
That's Carol Lenig. She's an investigative reporter at The Post. She's reported extensively on the Secret Service. She even wrote a book about the agency. It focused in part on how much security has changed since the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Every single agent that works on a security plan for an event, their first step is, where are the lines of sight to possibly harm my protectee, my president or my vice president or my candidate? And then they seek to mitigate that physically. And so the question became, how could Secret Service 101 have been failed more than 50 years after the Secret Service really learned this lesson in the most painful way?
From the newsroom of the Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm your guest host, Chris Velasco, in for Martin and Alahe. It's Tuesday, July 16th. Today, the details we now have about what the Secret Service and local law enforcement did the day of the shooting, and whether they could have done more. Carol, it feels like the big question on everyone's mind is, how did this happen? But before we get into that, I have to ask for context. You know, at these large presidential events like campaign rallies, what does the Secret Service detail do? Like, what do their security measures usually look like?
So whenever Secret Service agents take a president, or in this case, a former president, out into public view, several days before, and sometimes in the worst situation, a day before, they sketch out what's called an advance. Someone physically goes, a Secret Service agent and others in tow go and plan every step their president or former president is going to take on that stage, into the event, out of the event, and they map out, what do we have to do to secure our president or our person? And the Secret Service advance plan often includes rings of security. The most important are these three rings: the inner perimeter, the inner ring, which is the immediate body agents on let's just take Donald Trump, Trump's personal detail, the guys in the suits with the glasses, and sometimes the women. The middle ring of security, which is the crowd, the effort to set up some magnetometers to screen for weapons and guns, to allow people into sort of a corralled area to watch the rally or the event or the speech. And there are a lot of Secret Service agents that are posted throughout that area, as well as officers who are screening people and local police helping them. And then there's the outer ring, the outer perimeter. That is also sketched and planned to be secured by the Secret Service, but it is largely executed by local police in the area who come in as partners to help the Secret Service. They're looking for suspicious, erratic behavior. They're looking for people who seem to possibly be carrying a concealed weapon or trying to conceal something and acting strangely. Someone who's trying to rush the magnetometers or leap over a bike rack or fencing. And they're assignment most often is also to secure buildings that could be risky. Sometimes, and I've seen this many a time in security planning, Secret Service agents will assign local police to literally stand on top of the roofs of buildings or to lock down buildings that are on that outer perimeter, but within shooting distance, as in essence, of their protected person.
So, Carol, local police, local law enforcement, clearly kind of a big part of this operation. But how usual is that, right? Like, how common is it for the Secret Service to tap these kinds of local authorities?
So the Secret Service does not have endless resources. And as I've already just said, local police are essential to that outer perimeter of screening. In this case, in Butler, the Secret Service delegated the role of counter-sniper units, not all of them, but half of them, to local tactical police, folks who were sent to them from the Butler County Emergency Tactical Services, people who had some sort of SWAT training. Now, counter-snipers are set up to try to scan the crowd, spot and detect a possible attack, and also, let's put it nicely, neutralize a potential shooter, and in this case, kill them with a high-powered rifle from on high. So half of the counter-snipers on duty that day were Butler County police. Two Secret Service agents were on site as counter-assault team agents. The counter-assault team has the moniker Hawkeye, and Hawkeye is for covering and evacuating the president or the former president in the case that there is a threat that arises and there is worry about making sure that the protectee is safe. Hawkeye is heavily armed, black tactical gear, and on that Saturday, you would have seen the two of these agents in that black tactical gear rushing onto the stage with their guns pointed not towards the president, but out towards the crowd. They were giving the agents, the detail agents, and Trump cover to evacuate him to his limousine and get him the heck out of there. Two of those agents were Secret Service agents. The rest of the counter-assault team were local Butler area SWAT team members and police.
Okay, Carol, let's take just a moment to zoom out a little bit and run through exactly what happened on Saturday. You've obviously been reporting this out, and you've said you've been scouring videos that our team at the Post vets. So what do we know about how the Secret Service kind of responded at the scene?
What we at the Washington Post have discovered so far is that a man who was clambering onto a roof was spotted by bystanders.
Look, they're all pointing.
The Atlantic, maybe the Pacific.
Yeah, someone's on top of the roof. Look. Gary is right there. Right there. See him? He's laying down. See him?
Yeah, he's laying down.
Those bystanders were on the outer perimeter of the event. Most of them hadn't actually gotten inside the corralled area for the speech, but they were trying to listen to it and peek over to see what was going on and catch as much of it as they could. And while they were there, they saw on the kind of aluminum-sided building a man clambering onto this roof. And they called out to police.
Clambering on us.
We have criminals. We have people that are on the roof.
Two individuals that we've made contact with, two men who were just in the audience, said they flagged to police, please, please come over here. At least one police officer tries to hoist himself up to the roof to see what was going on. Was there a man up there? And my colleague, Isaac Stanley Becker, in interviewing a police officer about this, found that that officer, obviously hoisting himself with two hands, he doesn't have a gun in either of them, pulls himself up, sees the gunman, who then points his weapon at the officer. To protect himself, the officer drops down, and the gunman begins shooting at Donald Trump's stage.
So a cop clambers up to see what's going on, sees the gunman. Out of safety, he sort of descends the building again. Shots ring out. What happens next?
When shots ring out from that aluminum-sided building in the back of the audience and head towards Donald Trump, the marksman, this counter-sniper who works for the Secret Service, takes his shot and immediately kills the shooter. It's a stunning moment because if you've listened to the audio or the video of that event, it's almost like pop, 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 and then a break, and then pop, pop, and then pop, pop, pop. Donald Trump, upon the first string of gunfire, reaches for his ear, his right ear, and realizes there's blood, and people see the blood who are close to him. He ducks. Before an agent even gets to him, he instinctively ducks behind the platform, which, by the way, does not have bulletproof glass and is not in any way protective of him. A president would have had something very different to shield him in an open field. He ducks down. At least three of his immediate Secret Service detail agents, what I referred to as that inner ring, rush to him as fast as they can, and they almost land on him to try to cover his body. You can hear, and I confirmed this with the Secret Service to make sure I understood correctly, you can hear the agents yelling for him to keep down, stay down. You also hear, Hawkeye is here, Hawkeye is here.
Hawkeye's here. Hawkeye's here, move to the stair. Stair, get ready, stair, get ready. Are you ready?
That means the counter-assault agents who have the heavy arms have given them cover. That's the code for them to say, okay, we're good to go. We can leave now because we have cover. But they actually don't leave right at that second. The agents who are supposed to whisk him away, he's hollering to them that he wants to get his shoes.
Let me get my shoes.
He wants to get his shoes on, and they allow him to do that. Most of them, as you know, work with him all the time, so they are very familiar with Donald Trump. And he's setting the rules at that moment. He also does something that is so Donald Trump. He wants to rise up and pump his fist and show the audience that he's alive. And that is not the norm either. The Secret Service, you'll see, tries to put their arms and their biceps and their shoulders in front of his face as he's trying to do this. They whisk him away. They get him into his SUV, which we often call the limo, and speed him away from the fairgrounds. And Hawkeye, meaning the counter-assault team, then retreats just ever so slightly to continue to scan for potential follow-on threats, which is their assignment. You know, they always have to be prepared. It could be one guy shooting. It could be 10 guys coming over the hill. So they're still in ready mode even after Donald Trump has been whisked off the scene.
It feels like so many things either went wrong or didn't happen the way that had been planned in the moments leading up to this event and in the immediate kind of response. You've been speaking to experts and other members of the security community basically this whole time. What was their reaction to sort of what they saw unfold?
I know that most of the Secret Service agents, past and present, that I've spoken to are so disturbed and shocked by the line of sight issue that Donald Trump pumping his fist in the air is almost like an ancillary concern. The line of sight not being covered and mitigated, and this person being able to get a shot out from the only, truly the only obvious high ground, you know, plain as a piece of white paper in front of your face, that wasn't addressed in some way is a stunner to them. I remember that night after the shooting, I reached out to a former head of a presidential detail, and I said, look, you know, what do you think? The guys responded, they got him out of there, he's okay. And the agent's response was, this is terrible. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. He described the sleepless nights that so many other agents have described to me about planning ahead, putting buses and cranes and banners in front of high ground just so they make sure there's no way that somebody can take their guy out. And here, Donald Trump was maybe 3/4 of an inch from being killed.
After the break, we'll get into the race to figure out how something like this could happen, who should be held accountable, and what the events of the past few days mean for the future of the Secret Service itself. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
I understand that we're just, you know, days after an attempted assassination of a presidential candidate, but do we have a sense yet of a potential explanation for the line of sight issue? Like, it sounds like, as you put it, you know, Secret Service 101 to make sure those, like that, if nothing else has to be accounted for. Do we have a sense of what the Secret Service is thinking about all of this now?
The Secret Service is racing to determine where this breakdown occurred. They're reviewing the advanced security plan. These are classified documents that don't easily get passed to me. I wish that I had the advanced security plan in my hand. I've seen old archival ones, but they are racing to look at that plan and figure out where did things go wrong? And I will offer this, that the outer perimeter, again, is a place where the local police create a plan with the Secret Service. It's ultimately the service's responsibility. They create a plan for where they'll be posted, where officers will be stationed, which buildings officers will be responsible for sort of monitoring. And in some cases, as I said, securing, locking, talking to the occupants, telling them that they can't be in the building on that day, or they better not open any of the windows that day, and they better not get on the roof. There will be people who will address this.
So the investigation into what allowed this to happen is clearly underway. But for now, do we know? Are people at the agency, at the Secret Service, being held responsible for what happened?
You know, the agency that supervises the Secret Service, the Department of Homeland Security, the Secretary of Homeland Security today made several public comments. One of them was he is calling for an independent investigation that he is going to ensure happens outside of the Secret Service into this event. And he also said that no one on the security detail has been removed. It was an interesting answer to a question from a reporter. I have seen that the director, Kimberly Cheadle, of the Secret Service, has said in a memo to staff on Sunday that she is lauding the quick reaction time of the Secret Service agents to protect and evacuate Donald Trump. So she is focusing on that inner perimeter response. There's been very little in the way of answers for the agents of the Secret Service who are responsible for the advanced security plan.
I'd be willing to bet you're like me and that you've seen the sort of clip of the attack plastered all across the news over the last few days. But to step back just a bit, you know, how do we kind of contextualize what happened this weekend within other failings we've seen from the Secret Service in recent years, right? Like, does this feel like part of a trend for you or just kind of a really disturbing one-off?
It does not feel like a disturbing one-off. It feels like a disturbing, sad trend. You know, I cannot believe that I am saying 10 years ago, I wrote a series of stories between 2013 and 2015 about, you know, kind of gobsmacking security gaffes and breaches, a shooting at the White House in 2011.
New details emerged today about a 2011 incident that saw a gunman fire several bullets at the residence. Today's Washington Post reports the Secret Service fumbled its response.
An investigation of that was bungled. The shooting actually struck the White House, and the Secret Service insisted that it was a group of gangbangers fighting it out in a turf battle on the Washington Mall, not something aimed at the president. But it was. Seven bullets hit the White House, and they didn't know about it for 4 days. I wrote about a host of actions by the Secret Service to fail to check the criminal backgrounds of individuals who had weapons and were stationed as private security guards at the CDC with President Obama. And after I wrote those stories, a blue ribbon panel was appointed by President Obama to figure out what's wrong with this institution. They concluded that it was basically a group of amazing patriots that were holding things together with duct tape and staples, and that it hadn't been given enough funding or training, and that it needed the support of the federal government, especially in those two areas, funding and training, and that it was stretched too thin. And wouldn't you know it, as I call all my sources on Saturday and Sunday after this shooting, each one of them says, you know, oh, we had resource problems sending people to Butler that day, and we're stretched too thin, and there aren't enough snipers on duty, and there aren't enough counter-assault agents, and we've really, really, really got just not enough people to cover all the bases.
Carol, we've been talking a lot about sort of the Secret Service response to the shooting, but I'm really curious about the other side of that equation, right? Like, what do we know about what the Trump campaign has requested as far as protection? And do we know if they ever got what they asked for?
You know, in the wake of the shooting, there were a number of Republicans who were piping up to say, hey, I heard that Donald Trump's detail asked for additional resources and they got turned down. The Secret Service director or the Secret Service leadership said, no dice. And, you know, the Secret Service, when I spoke to them about this, because that's the first thing I wanted to check after line of sight, was no, we emphatically on the record say no, 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 no. The detail for Donald Trump never asked us for additional resources, and we never turned them down. In fact, they emphasized that in the last couple of months, as the frequency of rallies ramped up, that the Secret Service added a few additional what I'd call technical security features and added more detail agents to his team as he travels the country for these events. Some of the technical security issues are classified, so I'll just leave it there. But he was essentially having a bolstered amount of security and quite the opposite of what the critics were saying. Now, that doesn't mean what he had that day in Butler was sufficient, because something was wrong.
Clearly, as a result of all of this, it feels like something has to change. What is happening now to change how Secret Service protection functions?
Overnight, after the shooting, the director of Secret Service, I learned, ramped up the details for almost every single person that's protected in D.C., ramped them up with an extra two or three or whatever agents here, just responding to the possibility of this kind of attack, and mindful that that's a good idea.
As you continue your reporting over the next few days and weeks and months even, you know, what are you looking out for in the near term? Is there anything you're watching for?
You know, Director Cheadle has been struggling inside the agency. It reminds me very much of the revolt that Julia Pearson, who was the first female Secret Service director, endured. And she was undermined at every turn by several of her deputies and her leadership team who did not cotton to the idea of a woman running the agency. Cheadle has faced some of the same kinds of detractors who complain that she's on a rallying cry to hire more women and minorities into agent positions and promote more women and minorities, which has become a flashpoint of anger for some of the stalwart older agents. It's a real conundrum. I think one thing I'm going to be watching for is how she fares in this security failure, the worst since the assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan. I'm also wondering how the Biden administration is going to finally come to terms, and if it will be the first presidential administration to come to terms with a tiny agency that has such an enormous zero-fail mission. Will one president stand up and say, this is important, we can't just keep doing this on a shoestring and expect these agents who are patriots to suffer valiantly through a campaign season and try to make do?
Carol, thank you so much for talking with me about this today.
Thank you so much for putting your attention on it.
Carol Lenig is an investigative reporter at The Post. The Republican National Convention kicked off Monday in Milwaukee. After the assassination attempt, the Secret Service said that they had no plans to change its security for the gathering. It had already been considered a national special security event, the highest level the government can designate. Before we go, some breaking news from this afternoon. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez was found guilty on 16 felony counts after a two-month trial in Manhattan. The counts included bribery, extortion, wire fraud, obstruction of justice, and more. The Democratic senator from New Jersey was accused, indicted, and now stands convicted for a corruption scheme involving him and his wife accepting gold bars, cash, and a Mercedes-Benz. That was all in exchange for finalizing deals with foreign entities in Egypt and trying to derail criminal investigations in New Jersey. At the time, Menendez was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He's only the seventh sitting senator to be found guilty of a federal crime. The senator's team is expected to appeal the decision. Menendez can still serve the rest of his term after this conviction, but Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has already launched a call for Menendez to resign, and other lawmakers may vote to expel him if he doesn't step down. In that event, the governor of New Jersey would appoint someone to serve in his place until January. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Sabby Robinson and Ali Bianco. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Rena Flores. Thanks to Peter Walston and Isaac Stanley Becker. If you're looking for the latest updates on the big political news of the day, check out The Campaign Moment. The podcast is coming to you from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee this week, bringing you incisive analysis of the most noteworthy speeches, the delegate fights, all of the political battles brewing. You can listen to The Campaign Moment wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Chris Velasco. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.